Welcome in, latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Breton. Go by SEC Mike, go on the Twitters. And there he is, our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, been too long, man. How are you?
Mike, I am a little too warm. It has reached the point of the off season, and especially with the summer, it is too hot to be outside. I don't know about anybody else, but hey, we are 2 months away from kickoff. Week zero starts August 23rd. We've got a little trash talk from Florida State quarterback to Alabama. So it's the off season, but it's not that quiet, right?
No, not at all. And Steven, I don't know if it's the heat. I don't know if it's just physical activities, but I have like strained my neck or something. So I don't want anybody to think I'm being super casual. I like to sit up on these. I like to pay attention and make you folks think that I'm locked in here, but I'm going to be leaning back on this episode. Just I'm getting through it because it's the summer. I'm fired up for football and nothing's going to keep me from hanging out with the cousins.
Little surprised we didn't get the Hugh Freeze hospital bed experience here. Mike laid back with thumbs up, and that would have been quite the look, wouldn't it?
No doubt. Well, let's highlight that because I'm glad you were mentioning that. I don't have a graphic, but I can share the screen here for anybody that missed exactly what Stephen led with, because I got to get your thoughts because you're going to know more about this guy than I do. I remember watching him against Mizzou last. That's literally all I know about him. But the new Florida State quarterback, he was at Boston College last year. Thomas Castellanos here tells Pete Nakos on Three. He's dreamed of playing Alabama. They don't have Nick Saban to save him. I just don't see them stopping me. Man, what a comment here, Stephen. Thoughts on that? And how does Alabama, who projects as one of the best defenses in the country, how do they, at least on paper, look to stop old Thomas Castellanos, who, again, he had some highlights against Mizzou, but I don't know. From what I remember, Mizzou stopped him aside from a handful of big plays.
Mike, I think if you're Alabama, you probably feel pretty good about stopping Florida State's offense, you know, going into this game with all the new pieces. Like, they've got potentially three or four transfers that could start at the offensive line. Squirrel White, one of the ex-Tennessee receivers, could be starting. Also, Gus Malzahn calling plays. So there's a lot of like new going into that matchup. But man, just in general, I'll say, we saw this last week with Diego Pavia taking shots at the Big Ten in Tennessee. Like, I love this. Like, I love a little good offseason trash talk if you're Castellanos trying to fire up Florida State after a 2-10 year. But, Mike, that being said, I don't know that I'd be poking the Alabama defense too much here, right? I think I would just roll the ball out there in September and just let my play do the talking against a Alabama team that's favored, better defense, and rightfully so.
Yeah, I believe Alabama's a 12, 13-point favorite, somewhere in that line. So, again, it is a home game. I'm right there with you, though. I like the confidence, but I also like it if I'm Alabama that we got this quarterback talking trash as if there's any other reason needed for the Alabama defense to be completely locked in for this game. Facing old Gus Malzahn, he's an offensive coordinator down there now at Florida State, but man, now I'm even more fired up for this football game because I already had it as a hot seat bowl because whoever loses it, not saying they're going to get fired immediately, but you know the hot seat's going to start heating up quickly for the loser, Alabama at Florida State week one.
Yeah, and you know, you asked me kind of like a scouting report. Like, Castellanos is dynamic. Like, he's a good runner. He made some progress as a passer last year when he played at BC under Bill O'Brien. But I think his game is definitely that dynamic kind of run stuff. So, you know, I think he can create a lot of problems for a defense, and he can be hard to contain. But I think also, if you think about like the implications of this game, you've got a quarterback that Florida State went all in on when the portal opened up to go with this style. You've also got Alabama and Ty Simpson and a new quarterback there. So you got Mike Norvell and Kalen DeBoer, two coaches who were connected with the job. Obviously, DeBoer got it. Norvell didn't. So you have like all this kind of swirling around the personalities, hot seat, you know, pressure on DeBoer, pressure on the quarterbacks. There's a lot of pressure on Florida State. And now you're kind of, I think if you're Alabama, like, you were already amped up to go on the road and get a good win. Now you've got the quarterback for Florida State talking a little trash. So not sure Alabama needed any more motivation, but they got it, right?
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Well, hey, show topic for today, Stephen. We did the offense ranks, offensive position ranks last week. Go check it out if you missed it. Today we're going to rank the defensive position groups in the SEC. But before we do that, weekly, Stephen Lassen, bold prediction. All right, Stephen, so hit us with your weekly bold prediction.
Mike, I'm going to take 14 SEC teams to make a bowl game this year.
Ooh.
And I'll up the ante. How about 5 in the college football playoff?
Yeah. I love that. Let me guess. The two that aren't going to make it, according to Stephen Lassen, Mississippi State and Kentucky. Accurate?
That is accurate, yeah.
Okay, well, we can move off from that. But now let me try to guess your 5 SEC in the college football playoff. I'm going to say Texas, Georgia, Bama, LSU, Florida.
That's where I'm leaning. I'm thinking good guess. We're off to a good start tonight. You may be playing injured, but your accuracy is not as 100% tonight. Yeah, I'm leaning Florida right now for that 5th spot. I mean, you could shake up, I think, whether it's South Carolina, Florida. Like, I feel like somebody's going to come out of that middle tier of the SEC and make the playoff. Not only is it team strength, but just looking around the rest of college football, you know, you can look at the ACC, and I think Miami is certainly very capable. I think that Miami and Florida game early is huge. I don't really trust the second Big 12 team. I think that conference is going to beat up on itself. I think Michigan could be in that mix. Oklahoma could also deal Michigan a setback if it wins in September. So I just like the SEC's chances to get to 5. So give me 5 SEC teams to make the playoff and 14 go bowling.
Well, how about this, Stephen? So we currently have dueling bold predictions this week. Stephen says, hey, watch out, Florida could make the college football playoff. Cousin Shane says Florida is going to finish with a losing record. Oh, my God. So who do I have more faith in? Again, I love Cousin Shane. He's my blood here, but I'm going to lead Stephen on this one. I think he's got a better grip on the Florida Gators. Cousin Shane thinks it's a house of cards. So I don't know. Maybe we need a Stephen Lassen, Cousin Shane bet on this one.
Yeah, maybe we should. Maybe we should, like the losers got to buy like Cracker Barrel for the other or something. Where do you fall on Florida right now? I know you're going to release your like your official SEC ballot closer to media days, but are you kind of feeling the hype maybe like I am?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're in that conversation for sure. You're not the first one that I've seen that said Florida could make the playoff. I think they're right there. I don't have the guts right now to predict it though. I'm not ready to say Florida will make the playoff, but I think you're going to be right there. I really do. They're kind of in a similar vein to me of two teams, Oklahoma and A&M. I think one of those three, I have a good feeling one of them, especially if the SEC gets in 5, I guarantee you one of those teams is going to make it. But which one? I'm not 100% sure. Brandon Riley, shout out. He just gave us a donation, Stephen. Watch out for Castellanos when he plays Bama, laugh out loud. So, yeah, I'm not too worried about that guy. Although, we do appreciate the trash talk here in the middle of the summer. You know what?
Yeah, Castellanos and Gus Malzahn go all the way back. Of course, he was at UCF when Malzahn was there. So that little marriage has been together for a while. I think that's going to work out well for Florida State and the ACC, but I think it's a lot to ask in game one with all those new pieces. But I do love some offseason trash talk, Mike. I'm not going to lie. It's keeping it spicy, like Bielema trying to, you know, take shots at the SEC too. So stir it up. Let's go.
Yeah, that has been sorely missed. And even at media days, you know, we try to drum up all the engagement we can, but even then, it's muted and I don't want to name names here because I'm afraid we'll never get people to do our show again. But we have literally had media members get mad at us for posting clips, unedited, just things they've said. And I'm like, well, hell, is that the whole point of you jumping on here? Like, I'm trying to get you some buzz here. But no, even to me, some of the media boys, very few, but some of them, even they're mad about things that they said. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm the complete opposite. Clip away, I say.
Why not, right? It's like, hey, this is like the time of the year where you could just unload the preseason prediction canon and rankings and get some buzz out there. I mean, that's what talking season is all about. Like, we're breaking down these teams from, you know, certainly I know I'm going to be wrong quite a bit come December or January, but man, let's have some fun. Let's you know, kind of spice it up a little bit. It's the off season.
Right. And to that point, let me ask you this a little, you know, we're going off the rails here a little bit, but I've heard someone else speaking on this, Stephen, and we have talked about this at length, but in this portal era, this NIL era, this era of balloon conferences like the SEC, like the Big Ten, I think it's harder than ever to predict, you know, what these teams are going to be. And add to that, if you will, the perceived favorites, Texas, Georgia, I'll throw Bama in there, all new quarterbacks. And LSU, they bring back the quarterback. You could throw them as a favorite, but they have a lot of questions on the offensive line, the defensive line. And I know they've added players to shore that up via the transfer portal, but I guess what I'm trying to get to here, Stephen, is how unpredictable do you think this 2025 SEC season will be? And quite frankly, college football season, as opposed to years past.
I think, I know I've said this before, but I do think we know less about these teams than we did maybe like 5-10 years ago because of the portal. And just because we went through spring practice and now there's pretty much every, I would say, not every team, but a good chunk of them added players to the portal again and lost players. So we're kind of almost as much as we thought we learned, we may have lost a little bit and gained here and there. So I think we know less about the teams, but also I think if you think about like the hierarchy here, I almost think the top teams are not as strong. I think there could be like 8 to 9 teams that are national championship caliber, but it's like that middle tier. If you can figure out who you like, and to some extent that's like Florida, South Carolina, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, that middle tier feels pretty solid to me. It's just a matter of like who's going to make that jump from 9 wins to 10 wins and get into the playoffs. So at the top, it does feel a little bit more wide open because you don't have that Alabama dominance that we saw under Nick Saban. I think Georgia, Texas, LSU, Alabama can all win it this year, but it also feels like the top 8 are clustered a lot closer together than maybe before.
Yeah. And is it safe to say too, you said something very important there. Maybe the elite are not as elite as they have been in years past. Does that make it much more difficult, you think, to go undefeated? Because I'm of the opinion, I'm not saying it's impossible, but I think it's highly unlikely that we're going to get many, if any, undefeated teams in the SEC moving forward.
I would be really surprised if we saw multiple unbeatens. I think it's more likely to happen like in the G5 conferences, like a Liberty, like in Conference USA, where they have such an advantage in resources. I think it's going to be really hard in the power conferences to go undefeated. And I think like we start thinking about what that could mean in the SEC, like there's only 8 conference games now. If they go to 9 conference games, it's going to get even harder. So I don't think we're going to see seasons where there are these unbeaten teams. I think we have to get comfortable with this idea, like at the end of the year, when we're evaluating these teams, a team could have a 2 in the loss column and they could be better than a team that's got a 1 loss. A team that's got 3 losses can be better than 2 and 1. Team strength, conference strength, strength of schedule all has to matter. So I do think in this kind of era, it's made things way more unpredictable. And, you know, Texas is a great example of this because I've been getting a lot of questions like, why are you like Texas to win the national title? They lost this, this, and this. And I'm like, yeah, Ohio State lost this, this, and this, and Oregon lost this, and then Alabama's got questions, LSU, Clemson, Notre Dame. So everybody's got questions. so you have to, you're taking this leap of faith with every team. And so it has made it harder, but I also think that the week to week during the season is going to be even more unpredictable and crazier maybe than usual.
Yeah. And of course you buried the lead there, Steve, in your love affair of Arch Manning. That's the real reason, but.
Oh, of course I've already started picking out a space for him in Canton, Ohio up there. So,
but this show's love affair with Cousin JR is back.
Legend Cousin JR has done it again.
JR, we appreciate you, buddy. You just gifted a membership to Chicken 1515 Chicken. Welcome to the family.
Welcome to the family.
Courtesy of JR.
The memberships in this podcast are brought to you in part by Cousin JR.
Hey, we got a donation here. So before we get into, we're about to do the defensive position rankings. Shout out Cousin Bryce Carter. Give us $5, Steven. Just saw the show topic. Even though Arkansas's defense is very thin overall, can anyone show Xavier Sory some love at linebacker? Hell yeah. I mean, I think he's one of the best. But again, this is position groups that we're ranking. Not necessarily most outstanding players, but he's certainly in the conversation, I would think, for me personally, one of the best linebackers in the SEC, at least returning. What's your thoughts on Sory?
Mike, I think he's got to be in that conversation for all SEC honors. I think trying to figure out where he slots in, like I almost like him in that second tier of linebackers because you get Anthony Hill, Whit Weeks, Torian York, CJ Allen, Deontay Lawson. There's a lot of good linebackers coming back in this conference. But I think maybe the point that I think, you know, he's trying to make here is underrated season last year, you know, transferred in 99 tackles. He's going to be one of the leaders for this group. You're losing Landon Jackson and you're maybe going to shift some things around given those personnel losses. I think he's definitely underrated going into the season. I think Arkansas fans know how good he is. I think the rest of the SEC might find out this year. I like the year two jump as well, too. Like a transfer comes in, plays a lot, plays well. I think that second year they can make an even bigger leap. So I don't have him first team all SEC this year, but I do think that he is very much on my ballot for like second team.
Okay. Well, let's dive right into it, Steven. Ranking the defensive position groups in the SEC in 2025. And let's start with the defensive line. And before we take this deep dive, Steven and I were talking off air, you know, it's kind of difficult because there's so many different positions. You know, there's an edge defender, there's a buck defender, there's a cat, there's a beast, there's a this, there's a that. So, I mean, we could cheat and take a guy, maybe he's a linebacker. We could cheat and say, no, he's a defensive lineman. So there's a lot of different ways to kind of skin this cat here. It's a little bit different. But having said that, Steven, before we get into our top fives, are there any defensive line units that just missed the cut for you?
I had quite a few, Mike. I know, big surprise. But I do think this is it's a good year potentially for defensive lines in the SEC. I'll kind of spotlight a couple here. I think South Carolina, you know, with Dylan Stewart coming back, like how do you weigh one standout versus you know, a lot of questions elsewhere? Like how much does a stud make up for losing guys at end and tackle and Kyle Kennard? So I didn't have South Carolina in my top five, but they were close. LSU, I like some of the pieces from recruiting and then the transfer portal, Patrick Payton, Jack Pyburn coming in. You add in Jacoby and Guillory getting healthy. I could see this group making a big step forward. Also, really like Missouri's potential too. Darius Smith, Damon Wilson, Zion Young, Chris McClellan. That could be a really solid group. So those were four on the outside. I'm actually torn on two for the fifth spot. So I guess I'm just indecisive here. I like a lot of talent in the defensive line.
Okay. Well, how about this for, I like a lot of what you said. One team you didn't mention though, that just missed the cut for me, Ole Miss. With they got a lot of young talent like Cam Franklin, Jeffrey Rush. I know they just sent a lot of guys to the NFL, so natural to assume a little bit of a drop off. But they, under Pete Golden, they've been developing, they've been recruiting. They've got some nice players, Xavier Harris, Jamarius Brown. So I think Ole Miss. I almost even threw them into the top five, but I just took them out. Auburn, I think, may even be in your top five, but Kendrick Faulk, he could be one of the best outstanding individual defensive linemen. So I got Auburn on the just the outside looking in. I see Liquid's already upset. I got Florida. Just out, they were six for me. Caleb Banks, Tyreek Sapp, George Gums, Kyren James, LJ McCray. And then how about this, Steve? This might be blasphemous. I'll be probably dead wrong on this. But I got Georgia outside the top five. I'm not giving them the benefit of the doubt. They've got to earn it. I'm sure they'll get there, but I got Georgia on the outside looking in. They return, I believe it's 15, number 15 in terms of defensive line snaps returning from last year. So next to dead last is the Georgia Bulldogs.
Decaying dogs? Is that what you're saying?
maybe compared to that epic mini dynasty they went that was fueled by the defensive line. I think it's kind of wild to me how far that position group has fallen. And again, we're talking maybe the best defensive line ever in college football to where it is today. But to me, there's a drastic drop off there.
It's kind of like relative. It's almost like they're not as dominant as they were, but I actually have him in my top five, and we can talk about like why I've got him in there. I have Florida was the team that just missed mine as well. I like the trajectory. Obviously, getting Sapp and Banks back, two guys who should be preseason all SEC, is huge. They were also 12th in the SEC in SEC only games last year against the run. That's kind of like, I think, you know, to go back to our discussion, it's like you could kind of see what you want to in Florida. Like the last couple games of the season is either the start of a turnaround or it's just too small of a sample size. But I like Florida's defense trending up. I have him just out though at six.
Yeah, Cousin Shane thinks it's a complete mirage. He's a complete moron. Okay, but Liquid, shout out Liquid, because we're talking all this Florida. So he has gifted a donation.
Oh, Gators.
Appreciate you, Liquid. Liquid, he has gifted Cow G a membership. Cow, welcome to the family, courtesy of Liquid Flames.
Welcome to the family.
The biggest diehard Gator I know. So we appreciate you, Liquid.
Hey, Mike, did you have Texas A&M in your top five? Is that
On the defensive lines, I did not, no.
Yeah, I was curious to see where you had them because, you know, obviously losing the three important players there, but still someone like Cassius Howe, Marco Jones, true freshman, showed out in the spring game. I'm curious to see what the upside of this group is. They could be like ninth in the SEC in defensive line, but that still puts them like top 20 nationally or something.
Well, I may have to reevaluate, Steven, because Cousin Rick has come through again. Aggie defensive line will benefit from practicing against the Aggies, SEC's top offensive line. Gig'em, Cousin Rick, we appreciate you. $50, Steven.
Gig'em, Aggies.
We appreciate you, Cousin Rick. What a guy Cousin Rick is, you know what?
Cousin Rick, he's man, I need to update the power rankings here. He and Liquid tonight's taking the top spots in the power rank. So we appreciate all your cousins showing out.
Yeah, there's a lot. I promise you, there's a lot more Aggies coming, all these position rankings for me. But all right, so let's get into the top five then, Steve. Top five defensive lines position group heading into 2025. Who do you have number five?
Mike, I've got Tennessee. I wrestled Tennessee in Florida for this last spot, and I know Tennessee's losing James Pierce, but I feel like they've got the depth and talent to overcome that. I like Joshua Joseph to take a step forward this year. Still got Bryson Eason, Dominic Bailey coming back as well. 3.3 yards per carry in SEC games last season, so the defensive front really held its own against the run. I know it's a new year. I still think Tennessee's done a good enough job developing and acquiring talent here to not suffer too much of a drop-off.
Yeah, absolutely. I put Tennessee a lot higher. Number three, maybe I'm a little biased here, Steven, but you know, they got one of the best defensive line coaches in the country, and you're right, they lost some talent, but names to know like Davin Hobbs and Jordan Ross, these are guys that have played. Here's the thing I love about Tennessee's defensive line is they rotate guys in and out like crazy. And that has been a major, major emphasis, is building up that defensive line, building depth under Coach Rodney Garner. So Tennessee, arguably the best defensive line in the SEC last year. They may have not been that good, but they were close. They were the key, them in the running game were the key reason Tennessee made the playoffs. So I don't think it's a drastic drop off. I think they're going to be right there. So top five for sure, a little bit higher. I got them number three on my list.
I think that's fair. I mean, I actually think Tennessee's defensive line might be a little bit undervalued this offseason. You know, just kind of glancing at some of the other rankings out there, Mike, I feel like Tennessee's defensive front was a little bit forgotten, or just that it was all James Pierce. It just feels like they got enough dudes here to still be pretty stout in 2025.
Yeah, and I will disagree. Who's here? Peasy. He says, every time Tennessee faced a defensive O-line, they shrunk. I mean, Bamba was pretty good, were they not? They whooped them up and down. Florida, I thought they handled them in that game. So, I mean, everybody that faced Georgia and Ohio State struggles. I mean, that's why those teams were, you know, two of the top three, four teams in the country. So, but I digress. All right, so who would you have number four, Steven?
Mike, I am going to put Georgia at four. I'm still pretty high on projection and talent here for Kirby Smart. I like Christian Miller, Jordan Hall, like rising stars. I think especially Miller could be like that breakout first team, all SEC kind of caliber. You throw in Elijah Griffin, some of the other guys that they've recruited the last couple of years. Also, kind of depending on what you do with the edge rushers, you could throw Madozi, the Army transfer, who they're counting on a lot, kind of at either end or linebacker edge rusher. So I do think there are some questions here, but I believe in the talent and I believe in the projection. And I think over the course of the season, this group will go from preseason question mark, maybe, and all relative, to being one of the better defensive lines in the SEC.
How much Kirby Smart pay you, Steven? This is ridiculous. No,
I'm waiting on the Kirby Smart check to clear because Eric Manning check.
No, I kid. Georgia will probably be there. There's probably a two or three guys that are not household names by the end of the season are going to be all SEC caliber. It's just what they do in Athens. So I kid, but I don't take major exception to that. Like you said, Missouri, I forgot to mention, I got Missouri number five. So that's my five defensive line. And I'm giving Missouri a little bit of the benefit of the doubt because they've put a lot of guys here recently in the NFL off their front seven, and particularly on a defensive line. So can they keep that up? That's a tough ask, but they've been doing it. So I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt. I think Missouri, we'll see how good Damian Wilson is with the Tigers. But if he lives up to the hype, I'm feeling very confident about Missouri being a top five defensive line in the SEC.
Fair to say Missouri's defensive line might be the most underrated position group maybe in the SEC this offseason on defense.
Yeah, I think you could certainly say that. I mean, I think people just kind of discount them because, again, they send guys to the NFL, and then you're like, well, they surely can't replicate that, but they just keep doing it, you know?
Yeah, and you add in, I mean, I know it's like potential base, but if Damon Wilson and Darius Smith hit and they're good at getting to the quarterback, I mean, you throw in, like I said, Zion Young and Chris McClellan and Sterling Webb, like they've done a good job of like identifying guys through the portal. And this kind of gets at like the trust factor with Eli Drinkowitz. Like, yeah, you're going to be losing, you know, Christian Williams, Johnny Walker, some guys who were imported to your team last year. But their ability to find the next guys out of the portal and reload, and they're really talented too. It feels like that reloading phase is pretty short for this group with a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm. All right, so who is your number three defensive line, Steven?
Mike, I've got Oklahoma at three. This is a group that I've got third, but probably top five in the country. Love our Mason Thomas. I think in terms of just players that are underrated, not getting enough love nationally this preseason, he's up there. Demonic Williams, Jaden Jackson, that tackle combination, standout duo, and you throw in David Stone, of course, who they got back in after entering the portal, is a big deal. I do have a little bit of questions about the other defensive end spot because Marvin Jones didn't exactly live up to the hype at Florida State. We'll see if Oklahoma can get more out of him. I trust Brent Venables and the staff to do so. So a little bit of questions, a lot of potential, a lot of proven bodies here. So give me Oklahoma at three.
What happened to you, Steven? What happened to you? Come on, Oklahoma's number one. Give me them Sooners, Boomer Sooner defensive line. You said it right there, Brett Venables. I mean, he's going to get the most out of these guys. R. Mason Thomas, Jaden Jackson, Dominique Williams, Grayson Holton, Marvin Jones. Yeah, that was a Florida State problem, Steve. That ain't a Jones problem. Come on. I buy it into the hype. So I could be way off base, but give me Oklahoma, number one defensive line in the SEC this year. I think, they better be because, we're losing a lot of leadership, but that can be overcome quickly, I think, if we set the tone. If we're dominant on the defensive line early in the season, when we face Michigan, when we face Auburn, both at home, we're not winning. Probably not winning either one of those, Stephen. If the defensive line doesn't show up and dominate, or at least control the line of scrimmage for the majority of those games, that's going to be critical, I think, for Oklahoma right out the gate.
Yeah, especially Michigan, who's going to be bringing in that the law and order running game with Jordan Marshall and Justice Haynes. And also you throw in Bryce Underwood, the true freshman quarterback starting for Michigan. Like the way to set the tone in this game is to win right up front at the line of scrimmage, because that's where Michigan's going to want to play. So, I think if anything, maybe the best reason to rank this group number one is Brent Venables calling plays, because we saw this back at Clemson and we see this at Oklahoma now. Getting the most out of the defensive line is a strength here. And so in true, in a good way to adapt quickly to the SEC is to build up at the line of scrimmage, and Oklahoma's got it this year.
Yeah, they finally got to that point, especially on the defensive line, where they'll look more like an SEC defensive line this year. All right, so who's your number two defensive line?
I got Alabama too. I like this group, the frontline talent here. LT Overton was great last year with pressure. Can he translate that into more sacks? You've got Tim Keenan, James Smith back to clog up the interior. Kelby Collins also coming over from Florida. The depth is pretty young behind that front line, but I also think it's pretty promising. So I like this Alabama defense, and I think it, much like some of these other groups we've talked about, it is trending in the right direction going into this year.
Yeah, that's exactly where I have them too, Steven. Number two, defensive line, SEC. Give me Alabama, the Tide. This is another one. They're going to set the tone. And thank you, Thomas Castellanos, whatever your name is. Because this almost makes Bama number one. Because all of a sudden, I think if they lined up today, they'd probably be number one after hearing those comments. So that was also something that's been trending. I don't know if you saw that, Steven, but under his comments, apparently the Alabama defenders are having a good time with those comments. So they've seen it. And, thoughts and prayers to old Castellanos. You know what?
I was going to say, I bet the Alabama defensive line group chat was pretty inspired today, right?
All right. So number one, I think I already know where you're going. You are completely brainwashed, but tell us who's number one.
I've got Texas at one. I think like some of these other groups, it requires a little bit of leap of faith, a little bit of potential, because Colin Simmons, I think, could lead the country in sacks this year. He's back on one side. They've got some other, they're trying to figure out who's going to be the guy on the other side. And there's some turnover along the interior, but I like the potential for this group. All the guys they brought into the portal, they can rotate, they can keep them fresh, especially down the stretch in SEC games. And I think they'll just figure it out. This is a trust factor in Kwiatkowski and also the high end talent of a Colin Simmons. So I've got Texas at one, but honestly, I think Texas, Alabama, Oklahoma, and Georgia are all in my top 7 to 8 defensive lines in the country. And they're pretty close.
Hey, early candidate comment of the night, Stephen. Cousin Tony Maths here. Steven must have had his NIL check clear the bank, so I'm right there with you, Cousin Tony. This is ridiculous. All right. Let's get more of Steven's propaganda. Linebackers. Anybody just missed the cut? Best linebacking group in the SEC in 2025?
I felt pretty good about the top five that I had, but I think there were a couple that it's like they were really kind of close. Wanted to give Vanderbilt a tip of the cap because Langston Patterson, Brian Longwell coming back, defense got better last season. Not in the top five, but think really solid. Oklahoma, they lost Danny Stutzman. Kip Lewis, of course, made a ton of plays last year. He leads this group in 2025. So not in my top five, but really solid. You could also throw Missouri, Florida, and the one group that just missed mine is going to be Texas A&M. That's my number six. Torian York, a healthy Scooby Williams. You know, listening to Mike Elko earlier this offseason talk about Scooby Williams' injury early in the year and what he played through would give me a lot of confidence that he could be an even bigger force this season. So they were my number six. But like I said, Florida, Missouri, Oklahoma, Vanderbilt also getting a nod there.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about this for a number six, Steven? This one just missed the cut for me, but Ole Miss with Sundareen Perkins, TJ Dottery was a really great player. Tyler Banks, I think, nice potential there. So Ole Miss I considered, but really, especially those front line, I think we have potential all SEC caliber here in our starting unit in Oxford.
Agree. I actually have them in my top five for that reason. Ooh. I think the Perkins-Dottery combo, even with some turnover, even with some questions about that defense this year, given all the personnel changes, I had to give them a nod just because of the two studs coming back.
Okay, well, I guess we'll jump into your list then. Is that your number five?
That is. That's my number five. Kind of with Perkins and Dottery coming back, it just felt a pretty solid 1-2 punch. Losing Chris Paul is a big deal, but Perkins was, so good. 14 tackles for a loss last season. I'm banking on him taking a step forward too in this season. So I've got Ole Miss at five, and also a little bit of trust factor too, like you mentioned with the defensive line, kind of trust Pete Golding to get this group back on track quickly.
Well, I trust cousin Bryce Carter. Just gave us $10, Steven. He says, I hope Alabama loses every game, just like 99% of SEC fans. But more importantly, if Steven walks into a bar, what's his go-to beverage?
That's a good question. I'm boring. I just want some tea. Like, just give me tea. That's all I drink. Tea, coffee, and water. I'm a very boring consumer of beverages during the day.
So we could talk you into being a hotty toddy guy, because I think okay. There might be some tea in that.
Okay, I'm up for that.
Okay,
I'll try it. Yeah.
So no wonder you love Ole Miss. Okay, how about did this team make your top five, Steven? I didn't know what to do with them because I don't know what in the world is the deal with Harold Perkins. I don't know if he's a linebacker or what, but I put an LSU at number five with Whit Weeks. Hopefully he's back and. I don't know. I feel like this is a group. Blake Baker coaches them up. I think LSU's linebackers are going to be good this year.
I agree. I've got them at four. So we're on the same page here. Whit Weeks, I expect him to be back by 100% by the start of the season. I guess the other question here is, what do you do with Harold Perkins? Because kind of where he fits into your point, I feel like if you get the Harold Perkins that we saw that was dynamic and creating pressure, creating havoc, four is too low. But I think given what we know and the optimism around some of the younger players, plus a stud in Whit Weeks, I had to put him at four. But I could also make the case that they're higher if Harold Perkins hits this year.
Yeah. So, again, they're going to have to take a step up because we've got to get better on defense if we're going to make it happen. But I'm right there with you. So. Who was your number three linebacking core?
I've got Alabama at three. Deontay Lawson coming back from injury, but looks like he's going to be full go by the start of the season. You add in Justin Jefferson, who basically slots in for Jahad Campbell, whether it's Rusaw, Latham, Hill Green, also the transfer they brought in for Colorado to help with the depth on the interior of the linebacker group. It feels like a really solid top-to-bottom group. With some high-end potential and also some very quality depth, too.
Yeah, I've got Bama all the way up at number two, Steven. So that's what I think about Alabama. I know you said A&M just missed it for you. They're my number three. Thanks. I think Torian York's pretty awesome. Scooby Williams, he impressed me last year. So, I like where you're at. I just think you're a little bit wrong on some of these rankings. That's all. Okay.
I could easily slot A&M in there, especially as much as I like watching Torian York play. And kind of like you mentioned, if you add in a healthy Scooby Williams for the full season, that's a pretty good 1-2 punch and a good second level given what they lose on the defensive line that kind of fortifies that defense.
Mm-hmm. All right. So who's your number two and you haven't got to Texas yet, so we know they're going to be one or two here probably.
Yeah, that's a safe bet. I've got Georgia too. I love the interior of this group, like CJ Allen, Raylan Wilson, like that duo. I think CJ Allen's one of the top linebackers in the country coming back this year. And I think the question is, like, who emerges off the edge? Like, is it Gabe Harris? Is it Quintavious Johnson, Chris Cole, Madozi, the Army transfer? Kind of, again, are they defensive ends? Are they edges? Depending on where you count them. But either way, trust factor, talent, CJ Allen, Raylan Wilson. I like Georgia at two.
Okay, I put them number four, but I like everything you said. Again, they're another one where, you know, what are they going to do at outside linebacker? I think that's a question mark, like you were referencing there. But I'm sure they'll find an answer, and I'll probably look stupid for having them this low. Some people think that they have the best inside linebackers in the SEC, and they may very well have that. So I guess we'll just call this Texas Day, Steve, because that means Steve has got Texas number one linebackers, which is exactly what I have too.
Hard to pick against a group that's got like two studs, and especially yep. with somebody like Anthony Hill, 113 tackles last year, 16 and a half tackles for loss. Also throw in Brad Spence, the Arkansas transfer, and Trey Moore, the edge rusher who guess kind of slots in at linebacker now. That is a pretty solid group. I think this is probably the best linebacker group in college football.
Cousin Shane's in the comments. He says, well, just crown them. Just crown Texas already.
I was waiting for the comment section, Mike, because I changed up the helmets here. So,
well, all right, let's do defensive backs next, Steven. Who just missed the cut? Top defensive back groups for 2025 in the SEC this year?
I got a couple. South Carolina, third in the SEC in pass efficiency defense. Nick Emenwori, Odell Fortune gone. Still feel pretty good about this group, but thought they were kind of in that 6-7 range. Also, Missouri just missed for me. Auburn, pretty promising group of young talent. I didn't have them in, but they're kind of in that next tier. Also, I wanted to mention Texas A&M here, not because I would have them in the top five, but just a source of intrigue for me, given how last season ended, some of the additions. What kind of step forward do they take in year two?
Okay. Well, how about I threw for me just missed the cut, Steven. I went Oklahoma.
Yeah,
because I think they could be a factor this year. They're bringing back some big time playmakers, Eli Bowen, Kendall Dobie back from injury. I think that he's an X factor there they didn't have for much of the season. And I got Mizzou, Steven. I love Jalen Catalon. Inserting him into that lineup with Daylon Carnell. I think he's been there 26 years. Torriano Pride in year two. Marvin Burks, Dre Norwood, Caleb Flagg. I may have underrated Missouri, but I think Oklahoma, Missouri, they'll have two of the better secondaries in the conference this year.
I do like Oklahoma a lot. Eli Bowen, Peyton Bowen, two very promising pieces to that defense. It is interesting. I think Jalen Catalone's been around since, like, you know, it feels like 2014 in college football, because he's bounced around quite a bit at Texas, UNLV, and Arkansas. So I think 2019 was when he played at Arkansas. So good to get a 10-year veteran to add to your secondary.
All right, so now we'll get into the top five. Steven, who do you got as a number five defensive backfield in the SEC?
I'm going to take a bit of a gamble here, and I'm going to pick LSU at five. I think they're going to take a big step forward. So they were 11th in the SEC in pass efficiency defense last year, but I like the addition of Mansoor Delaney, the Virginia Tech transfer at corner. You add in DJ Pickett, the true freshman. They've upgraded their cornerback room quite a bit. AJ Halsey, the Houston transfer, also a big pickup. So I like the combination of what they have coming back, plus Blake Baker second year, and the transfer additions. It feels like there's a good mix of talent, experience, and then also a expected jump in production because of the year two coaching situation.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't even really considered LSU, to be honest with you, Stephen, but a lot of that does make sense. I was watching over the weekend, the Florida LSU game from last year. And yeah, I mean, they were getting smoked there, but a lot of reasons, you know, that you just laid out there. The additions year two could make a big jump down to Baton Rouge, but I put Tennessee number five, Steven. They return more defensive back snaps than anybody in the conference this year. Now, I'm a little worried. Jermaine McCoy, he tore his ACL in January. So, you know, this is kind of assuming he plays, but who knows? Boo Carter here, too. Ricky Gibson's solid. And Farouk, their new safety, is supposed to be really, really good. He's not played much, at least not in key situations. So I'm kind of expecting him to take a jump as well. I think Tennessee's secondary could be really good this year.
I agree, Mike. I can't believe you're hating on Tennessee. I've got them higher. I've got them at four.
All right.
I think there is a question here of like, what do you do with a secondary that's its best player is dealing with a torn ACL, and also how fast does he get back to the level that he could be like he could be first team All-America this year. So how fast does he get back to that level? I also think that Tennessee's got some, you know, the combination of like Ricky Gibson getting better, Boo Carter's all around potential. You know, you mentioned Farouk Turrentine also back at safety. They were fourth in the SEC in pass efficiency defense last year with a revamped Syracuse offense in game one, East Tennessee State in game two. Maybe you don't need McCoy until you play Georgia in week three. So he's got a little bit of extra time, but that's kind of the X factor in this for me, is just not knowing at what full strength he'll be and if he's playing up to his first team All-America caliber potential.
Yeah. So maybe this is a little bit of a leap of faith. Maybe I've been influenced by Cousin Rick. I'm going A&M number four, Stephen, with the blanket back. Will Lee, Des Ricks racked up a ton of snaps last year. Bryce Anderson and Tyreek Chappelle back from injury. Dalton Brooks played a ton last year. I like the talent here at A&M. You know, they were a travesty in some of these games here. Auburn in particular, Southern Cal's not much better. But I think they'll take a big – we talk about year two jumps. Mike Elko coaching up this A&M defense. I think A&M's secondary will be – maybe not. I got them number four, so I don't have them quite top three, but one of the more improved secondaries, I think, in the conference.
I think it's hard to envision, given the scrutiny that Mike Elko put on the secondary, that it will be as iffy as it was at the end of last season. I don't think he's going to let that happen again. And so I think you could see, I mean, you've got a stud in Will Lee to start off your process with for putting the 2025 roster together. You add in some transfers, they look a little deeper. Getting Chappelle back is huge, because I think some of the comments that Elko kind of made this offseason made me think that they had to change a lot when he went down. So I could see like this group rebounding. I think the question is like, they're not going to be as bad as they were at the end of last season. What's the upside here? So I didn't have them in my top five, but if you told me they made a significant leap forward this year, I would agree with you. And also thinking about what they lost up front, they need to be better on the back end this year until that group stabilizes.
Yeah. All right. So who you got as number three defensive backfield?
I've got Georgia, and there are some questions here. They were seventh in the SEC in pass efficiency defense. Also, did not love the big plays they allowed, 17 of 30 plus. That was kind of uncharacteristic for Georgia. They do have some turnover, but just kind of trust Kirby Smart and this staff to fill out the secondary. You know, KJ Bolden, the next superstar. They've also got Dalen Everett, who should be an all SEC guy. Some guys through the portal also coming in to help fortify depth at safety or corner. So I feel good about this group getting better than seventh in the SEC in pass efficiency defense.
Now, is this crazy, Steve? Is this crazy? I know you. I think you put them in your honorable mention here. I'm saying South Carolina with a lot of reps back with Jalen Kilgore, DQ Smith, Judge Collier, Vicari Swain. I like the experience. I know they lost a high second round pick, Nick Amonwori. He was pretty awesome. But I love the progression on the defensive side of the football under Clayton White. And I think South Carolina can be that again this fall, and particularly with the first couple opponents they got, I think they're going to have a real opportunity to gain some confidence before, you know, the one that I'm mostly concerned about early on would be at LSU, but that's a sixth game of the season.
Yeah, I think that's a great point because, first of all, I do like South Carolina's secondary. I had them sixth, so we're not like that far off. But to your point, you know, if you think about some of their early offenses, like Virginia Tech struggled last year, had a quarterback injury. Offensively, they weren't as crisp. But also, you go down the list, like Missouri's breaking in a new quarterback. You've got Kentucky early in the season, Vanderbilt with Diego Pavia. So they've got some opportunities there to build some confidence in. What, even with the loss of Eamon Worry, there is still a very, very strong core coming back next year.
All right, so we're in the top two of Stephen's defensive backs, and he hadn't mentioned Texas yet, so surprise, surprise, they're in the top two. Who's number two?
I'm going Texas, Mike. Okay.
Wait, you're not number one?
Yeah, the NIL check wasn't big enough, so I had to move him down one. It is close, one versus two. In the SEC for secondary, we'll get to number one, but it was separated by a very small margin. But losing Shade Barron, it's a significant loss for the secondary. I still like Malik Muhammad, Michael Taft. Both those guys are preseason All-Americans for me. They've got a lot of other guys, like whether it's Guillebeau, Jelani McDonald, Derek Williams. However the lineup looks, I think they're going to be really good on the back end. So first in the SEC in pass efficiency defense last season. Losing Barron's a big deal. I'm not expecting a massive drop off, but I've got him at two right now in my defensive back rankings.
Yeah, I love everything you just said, Stephen. I got Texas number two too. I'm just giving you a hard time, but I'm curious if you got number one. Same as I went with Bama.
I did too.
Okay, yeah. I mean, Alabama should have one of the better defenses, and they're bringing back a ton in the secondary. In Damani Jackson, Xavier Brown, Keon Sapp, Bray Hubbard is one of the highest ranked safeties returning in the Southeastern Conference. So this looks like a formidable group here.
Yeah, isn't it funny how last season this was the biggest question, and by the end of the year it was pretty much a strength. I think they were second in the SEC in pass efficiency defense. But all the questions about personnel turnover, scheme, how does transfers and freshmen, how does it all fit together, ended up fitting together pretty well by the end of the year. And now all of that is coming back. You add in Cam Calhoun, the Utah transfer, gives you a little bit more depth at corner. So they've got a really good mix here at Alabama of like experience and talent at corner and safety off a group that was statistically very solid last year.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that's our defensive position group breakdowns. I can already tell no one agrees with any of these, Stephen, but that's fine. You know, it's talking season, so feel free to flame away in the comments. You know what,
Mike? What's the biggest disagreement here in our rankings here?
Cousin Shay says Stuven says. the Texas love, that's a bit much, but I think the biggest one you missed is having Oklahoma's defensive line so low. That's the one I am the most angered by.
I still think they're like a top five group. Mm-hmm. You know, you're basically separating, you're splitting hairs there between your top, you know, three to four lines in the SEC. Maybe it's just what I saw from Florida State's defense last year, but man, if that second defensive end spot is a worry spot for Oklahoma, that's probably knocking Oklahoma down a spot or two in the rankings for me there.
Right. And do we have time for you to unveil your Athlon All SEC team?
Oh, yeah, I need more people mad at me tonight, right?
Exactly. They're already, you know, I don't think you can upset these people even more than they are right now.
Mike, I try to be a straight shooter when I come on the show, and here I am getting destroyed in the comments. So do we want to start with...
First of all, how many Texas guys made the list? Is it the entire team?
Yeah, it's actually the entire first and second team. why are we going to play the games, right?
So we know for you, it starts with everything starts and ends with Arch Manning, right?
Oh, of course. I've already etched the Heisman Trophy in my basement. I'm sending him the nameplate tomorrow. Yes, Arch Manning is my first team All-SEC quarterback. I will say this. In all seriousness, it really is a close call. Like, I think you could make a case for Nussmeier. I think you could make a case for Sellers. I think you could make a case for Lagway as well. I'm a little bit, to go back to our Florida discussion, I am a little bit worried about Lagway's health. That's the one thing that's holding me back. I think Sellers probably has the most ability to just have that crazy statistical season that ends up being first team All-SEC and gets into New York for the Heisman Trophy ceremony. So top four are close, but I'm banking on Arch's potential in Sark's offense this year to be first team All-SEC.
So it's safe to say, we probably should have led with this here, that your All-SEC team is largely a projection of the season to come, not necessarily where these guys stand maybe in the preseason.
Yes, that is an important point, because I'm not worried. Like, if you were just asking me based upon preseason, what do we know, I would have something different. I am trying to project to the end of the season by December when that list comes out. That's what it will look like.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to do it. I think it's kind of gutless, but some people base it on what you did last year. So, all right. So how about the running backs for you?
Yeah, I think this is a tough position. There's a lot of committees and newcomers here. Ahmad Hardy, Jaden Hott, and Trey Wisner are my All-SEC running backs. Also, just wanted to give a little bit of love to Jaden Baugh and Le'Veon Moss, two guys I think are being overlooked this preseason. I will have them on another team that'll be released this week. But Ott, Hardy, and Wisner are my three first-team SEC running backs.
Interesting. So two transfers coming in here. Any consideration to the transfer down at State, Old Fluff?
I did not have him in the first team consideration. I think my biggest question is, I mean, first of all, first team, all name team for sure. I wonder about the breakdown of carries there. You and I talked about Mississippi State with running backs. That feels like a pretty underrated backfield. Just don't know if that's the other hard part with some of this. Like, it's a projection on stats too. It's mm-hmm. not, we could talk about like best players think someone's better, but stats are probably going to win out in the All-SEC voters. So hard to see it for Fluff. Yeah.
And how difficult is it to project too? You know, two teams that come to mind, Tennessee and Ole Miss, who we know will run the ball really well, but we don't quite know. I mean, we might have an idea of who will start, but how many carries will they actually get? I mean, this running back's got to be one of the toughest positions, because I don't want to say it's easy to break out, but I think there's a number of breakout candidates across the conference.
It's really hard. And I think to your point, trying to figure out like some of these situations like Tennessee, you mentioned Ole Miss, like what do you do at LSU with Caden Durham, Harlan Berry? That's a pretty potent backfield. I'm very high on Jaden Ott, but is there going to be enough production there this year? I mean, he was a 1,000-yard rusher at Cal. He was banged up last season. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely some guesswork in the running backs, because you're trying to guess workload and carries, and also trying to take into account just your raw talent here. Nate Frazier at Georgia is another one. Like, if he ends up getting the full workload, he's probably first or second team All-SEC.
What about, did you give any consideration at all? One running back I love, not saying he really should be here, but I think he could. Again, we're projecting out, right? Seth Alexander Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I did not have him first or second team, but I think that's a good call. I am a little bit worried about Vanderbilt's offensive line, and that's another factor in running backs, is trying to take into account what they have in front of them. But as far as workload, he's probably got one of the probably more open, clear paths to carries. I think is that fair to say?
Oh, no doubt. And again, with defenses focused on Pavia, you know, that's a tricky, tricky offense. I don't know. I just think he's one heck of a runner. And again, there's probably 10 more guys more talented than him in the SEC at the running back position, but highly productive. And he's been that way his entire career. And I thought last year was a career year for him.
Yeah, it's, you know, the tricky part about, I guess, the, like, at Vanderbilt with Pavia had 192 carries last year. Alexander at 164. I think you'd like to see Alexander get a little closer to 200 just mm-hmm. to take some of that wear and tear off Pavia, which helps him get into that all SEC consideration. So definitely, I think in a 16 team conference, you're talking about like the best of the best, the SEC. If this was like 12 team old school SEC days, he's probably a lot higher in this list.
All right. So who you got as your all conference receivers?
Mike, I've got, big surprise here, Ryan Williams, Cam Coleman, and Deion Burks. A little bit of a surprise here. Should note Eugene Wilson, Ryan Wingo, Aaron Anderson, Eric Singleton, Kevin Coleman. There's a host of other receivers in the SEC. I've got Kevin Concepcion as my all-purpose player too. So there's a host of really good receivers, but I felt pretty good about those three for first team all SEC.
Interesting. I don't think he mentioned a player off his team, but I know their fans really love their group, and maybe it'll be a little bit of a committee. But did you consider any of the Gators?
Eugene Wilson was very high on my list. In fact, he'll probably have him second team when it's released. And of course, coming off the injury too, always a little bit of a concern for me. But I just look at his numbers last year, like 20 catches in four games, and you lose Badger and DK, thinking about what he did as a freshman. Like that, there's a wide window of opportunity to make a lot of plays this year, and I suspect he'll end up being the go-to guy for Lagway.
And what about, could you tell us, again, this happened months ago, so I know Florida fans are well aware, but maybe the rest of the SEC fans, this flew under the radar. The transfer they got that's supposed to be like a speed demon, is he from UCLA, or I think?
Yeah, J. Michael Sturdivant. Yeah, I always thought that he was underutilized. And to be fair, I thought UCLA's offense was just a total mess last year under Eric Bieniemy. But yeah, he averaged like over like 17 or 16 yards per catch in 2023. He's had really inconsistent quarterback play at UCLA. So I like his skill set in this offense. And I think he's like 6'3", 200 pounds. He's got the size, got the speed. You add him with Eugene Wilson kind of being the safety valve, kind of maybe the short stuff. There's a nice mix there for Lagway this year.
And apologies if you mentioned these guys, but let me ask you a question here. And not that either one of these should really be considered for this spot today, but I think if they live up to their potential, possibly could. Which do you think is more realistic of the LSU transfers, Nick Anderson or Berrion Brown, by the end of the year being here on this list? Because Nick Anderson, we know, was banged up all last year for Oklahoma, but he had 10 touchdowns as a freshman. That's an all-time Oklahoma record for a freshman to score 10 touchdowns. And then Berrion Brown, you know, I think some people have kind of written him off, but I don't know what to make of him because the quarterback play has been atrocious the last couple of years in Lexington, and I don't know how you are truly an effective receiver with that level of inept offense. So, but both those guys coming to Baton Rouge with perhaps, not saying he is for sure, but perhaps the best quarterback in the conference, both of those guys could really break out this year.
I agree. It's tough to sort out LSU's receivers because I also like Chris Hilton too. I think he's going to be a nice big play threat for this offense. So I would probably lean Aaron Anderson like as the top one, but also I might go like Nick Anderson and then Berrion Brown if I was like tearing them off for all conference consideration. I think the problem is this is the like best player versus stats debate because they're like talent wise, both of those guys, and throw Chris Hilton in there, they would probably rank higher than some of the guys who make third or fourth team. The question is like, how does the catches going to be divided up? That's the hard part, but I would probably lean Anderson over Brown there.
All right, so who's your all-SEC tight end?
But Vanderbilt's Eli Stowers. Got to give some love to Stowers, just the season that he had, the connection with Pavia. Felt like he was a pretty slam dunk case. Also want to mention Jack Andres, the tight end transfer from California to Texas, catching passes from the world's greatest quarterback, Arch Manning. I would probably put him second right now.
He's just there because he's lined up next to Arch. I mean, we got to give him his due. So, yeah, Stowers for me for sure. That's an easy one. Did you pick an offensive line?
I did. Speaking of very difficult, I got Jake Slaughter as the top center in the conference. I'm going to cheat a little bit here because I think Parker Brailsford is one of the better five in the league. So he's going to make my all-SEC first team with Slaughter at center. Reed Adams from Texas A&M, also first team. Caden Proctor and Caden Green, also my first team selections. And, of course, you could throw Trey Zune, Austin Barber, Jaden Roberts from Alabama. There is a host and somebody from Georgia, I'm sure, will be in that mix too this year.
They always are, those dogs. Yeah. All right, how about defensive line?
Mike, a very strong year for defensive line talent in the SEC. It starts with two sophomores, Dylan Stewart and Colin Simmons, two of the best in the country. They make my first team along with LT Overton, Keldrick Falk, and R. Mason Thomas. With 16 teams and so much talent, I like to do an extra spot or two. I think R. Mason Thomas deserves to be on that first team all SEC.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? In this conference, I mean, there's probably guys that are could be on your third team that by the end of the year are all American. I mean, I think this is where all the great, at least for the majority, the great, great majority of the defensive linemen in the country play in the SEC, outside of maybe a handful of teams across the country that get their fair share. And that's why they're dominating their conference, like Clemson, Ohio State, Penn State. But beyond those, they all play in the SEC.
Yeah, no, you bring up a good point, which is when I do the All-America team, like the best, you have to start backwards. You do the all-conferences first. Like the first one I start with is the SEC and work my way to the Big Ten, because those were your two like kind of pots of talent in college football are, and you start filling those in. And so, yeah, a lot of guys who were like third team at spots here and there would be consideration for All-America honors. That's how deep it is.
Mm-hmm. All right, so who are your all SEC linebackers?
Got Anthony Hill from Texas, slam dunk, easy selection. Whit Weeks from LSU, Torian York, CJ Allen, and Suntarine Perkins. So a very strong group of linebackers in the SEC this year.
Man, I forgot you hated Georgia linebackers. That old fiasco there. You didn't even mention one.
Oh, CJ Allen. So I'm sorry if I didn't mention. Okay. It. He should be on there. Yeah.
Maybe I didn't hear you, but okay, you're back in the good graces of Athens. I forgot there.
People are still mad at me, Mike, about coach scouting that I had nothing to do with.
I'm going to bring that up every episode until the season kicks off, just so you know. All right, and then how about defensive backs?
Let's start at corner. Jermod McCoy from Tennessee, Malik Muhammad from Texas, also considered Will Lee, Dalen Everett, Damani Jackson were kind of the next tier. At safety, KJ Bolden and Michael Taft. You could throw in Jalen Catalan, Bray Hubbard, Keon Sab. Also, a little love for Isaac Smith, too, at Mississippi State. Kind of an underrated star in this conference.
Yeah, I think that's another position. I know that we just hit on a lot of position, corner, nickel, safety, and all that, but I think that's a very underrated group this year in the SEC. There should be a lot of really good secondaries. How about the kid at Vanderbilt? I didn't hear you mention him either.
Randon Fontenette.
Yeah. I mean, he's solid too.
Yeah, definitely. I think he's got to be in the mix for probably second, third team all SEC. Breakout season last year, one of the leaders for that defense again this year. So I'm pretty high on him, but I would probably put him probably second, third team.
Hey, cousin servant here. He wants to know, have you gotten Arch's autograph yet?
Still working on that, man.
Maybe I can hook it up.
SEC media days, Mike's to be.
All right. And then just know how prepared you are. If you don't have this, that's fine. But do you have kicker, punter?
I do. So kicker will go Baden Woodring from Georgia, Brett Thorson from Georgia, punter. We'll go Barry and Brown from LSU, a kick returner, and Cam Shanks at Arkansas as the punt returner. UAB transfer. He took a couple back last year at UAB. Nice get at receiver and also special teams for Arkansas.
Okay, perfect. So I think you have laid out, Stephen, enough ammunition for these cousins to get fired up and send some. Don't send any hate mail, but they're probably typing it as we speak.
I welcome it because it's the off season. We can have some good banter, you know, like Thomas Castellanos, Diego Pavia. We can stir it up a little bit. We can have some fun, right?
Oh, without a doubt. And again, I have so much fun, Stephen, when I'm not on this show, reading my Athlon Sports College Football Preview magazine. So before we end this one, can you remind the cousins? But, you know, this is the perfect time to go out and get it. Where can they get their copy of the Athlon Sports College Football Preview magazine?
Absolutely. So on newsstands, it looks like Publix and the bookstore are your best places to get it. They are on newsstands nationwide. And if you can't find them on the newsstand, athlonsports.com magazines, at the very top of our website, takes you to our store. We have two SEC covers, and as of last check, they're both still in stock, which won't be for much longer, because a little bit of self-scouting. I went to a Publix a week ago, and they had a bunch of them, and they were down to nothing this week. So they are selling fast on the newsstand.
Yeah, this is the time of year to gobble that up, Stephen. I believe we are literally 2 months to the day away. I think it might actually be longer than 60 days. But we're June 23rd, August 23rd, college football season kicks off. So it'll be here before you know it. Go get your Athlon Sports College Football Preview magazine to gear you up for college football season. But I think that's going to do it for this episode of the show. We appreciate each and every one of you for hanging out. We'll catch you with Cousin Shane on the next one tomorrow. Until then, have a good one.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.